Hi everyone, this is Joyce, and you're listening to Powerhouse. In this episode, I speak to Peggy Liu, chairperson of JUICE and the Green Goddess of China. She's been bridging the East and West on all things related to green and renewable energy since 2006. She has an amazing way of bringing people together, building momentum, and making things happen. Welcome to Powerhouse. Joining us today is Peggy Liu, chairperson of JUICE. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Joyce, for having me.
It's pretty awesome. We were just chit-chatting a little bit earlier that we met over audio on Clubhouse, and I've seen join a lot of Peggy's amazing rooms. So it's really awesome to hear your stories. And I wanted to, and thanks for joining the podcast to dive in a bit more. Maybe we just start with what are you currently doing and how did you get to your current career?
Well, I'm currently an environmentalist among many other things, and I am really focused on changing the way China creates and uses energy. But that has really expanded because China and pollution, I mean, is really just one big ecosystem. It's not like China just, its impact stops at the borders, right? It's not like you can say pollution stop at China's borders. So in the last decade and a half, I've really been traveling all over the world to promote collaboration between China and other countries. And how did I get to this? Well, that's sort of a really interesting story as things go. The best things happen unplanned. And in 2006, the new president of MIT, which is where I went to school at the time, or was at the time, coming to Shanghai, and I was a member of the MIT club, an officer of the MIT club. And we hosted her, and I was like, wow, this is the first ever female president of MIT and probably the last in a while. And so I was like, well, how do we help support Susan Hockfeld in what she wants to do, which is to reorganize MIT around life sciences and clean energy? So I decided to host a conference, the first ever clean tech international world-class clean tech forum for investors. And it sort of accidentally became the first public dialogues between US and Chinese government officials on clean energy, unbeknownst to me. And I think I just hosted a really good party and people really liked it. And people were like, no, 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 you can't just stop here. You have to help US and China because we have 60 memorandums of understanding and nothing tangible to show for it. So please help us with programmatic collaboration. And then over the last decade, I just realized, wow, I am uniquely suited to this because I was born in the US. I live in China. I speak both languages and I understand both cultures. And I can sort of bridge the issues, which are mainly cultural, frankly. It's mainly, you know, things like the importance of gifts or where you sit or the importance of drinking together and eating together before doing a contract. What does success look like is different. And all these little tiny things add up. And so I just sort of sat in the middle. And over the last decade, I mean, it's been a whirlwind because we've changed China six times over. So six times over, we've been able to create societal scale changes that really changed the trajectory of how much energy China used and how much pollution it was causing, and really the mindset of the government and companies and people. And so that's taught me an awful lot about how to change the world. And it's also affected me as a person.
When you first got into that position or the first event, did you think of, or did you always wanted to kind of go into China and start working there? Or was it completely just different from what you planned to do when you went into MIT?
Well, my husband and I moved to China in 2004. So I started JUICE in 2006. It became a real organization in 2007. And so it wasn't something that I planned to do. It was literally something I happened to be in Shanghai. And Susan Hockfeld, the president of MIT, happened to come through Shanghai. And I happened to do this and I happened to do that. So really nothing was planned, but I think all my life I've been called to help bridge both worlds. I think as many people who are straddling both worlds feel a little bit schizophrenic, right? It's a little bit like your mother and father are fighting a lot and you just want them to get along. And so, you know, I just naturally used my I think womanly skills at throwing potluck parties. I mean, that's simplifying it, but really it has a lot to do with how do you bring people together in a way that they're comfortable with each other? Because collaboration, no matter what and what industry you're talking about really has to do more with how does one heart feel talking to another heart? Mm-hmm. And do you feel safe? Does the inner child feel safe talking to these people that you know, don't know their culture, you don't know their language, you don't know their food, etc.? Do you feel safe? And so I really use my intuition as a party host to say, hey, you know, do you feel warmly welcomed? Do you feel warmly welcomed? This person is a wallflower. Let me introduce them to this person, right? And hey, let's do a game together. Let's interact together. And so it's a lot of the same skills. And then, of course, as a mom, it's a little bit like being a mom to make sure that you have everybody sort of in line and not fighting all the time. So it's those two things that really help me be successful at Choose. Again, I'm way oversimplifying it, but I do think a lot of collaboration has more to do with the heart than white papers or the head or statistics or politics or policies. I mean, honestly, if I threw that all out the door, it would be fine.
Right.
If you just listen to, hey, are these guys getting along? Then you can do magical things.
Absolutely. That's a major step, right? Do they even want to hear each other talk, right? And then you get into the heart of the matter. That's amazing. How many kids do you have?
I have two. One is 16 and one is almost 18. So let's call them 18. Mm-hmm. And they're really, really good kids. They're mixed blood. So they're half American, Caucasian, and half Chinese. And I think that is going to give them a really interesting vantage point to help bridge the worlds and to make people really understand where it's one world, one ecosystem, one heart. It's really not what the US media makes it out to be, which is China versus the US and et cetera. There's no real good and evil. It's all one beating ecosystem. It's one beating heart, right? The heart has the push out of blood and then it's like a breath, right? And you can't have one without the other, right? So I think my kids will be uniquely suited to helping people realize, hey, a breath.
It's all part of the same.
I actually feel that, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's an amazing way to put it. I've never really heard it that way, but that's that works. Obviously, it's like obvious, right? It should be obvious.
Well, yeah. You know, it's just like there can't be day without night, right? You can't have right without left. It's one ecosystem. And a lot of people don't understand. So they sort of chop off, you know, your arm and chop off your leg or something. And you think, oh, well, that leg is a better leg than this leg. Well, it really does not work that way. Then you end up not being able to walk at all.
Well, so with over 10 years of getting into or starting Juice and finding your, you know, passion and your career path, what is the most challenging time? I'm sure there's so many, right? It was such a big change over, you know, six times, as you said. What is the biggest challenge that you faced and how do you overcome that?
Well, I would say that if you've ever been to business school or you study organizational like management and these types of models, what you'll find is a lot of old school pyramids. Right. There's usually somebody at the top and then a lot of people at the bottom and everything seems to be very flat, very 2D and very territorial. And you're trying to draw boundaries and contracts and zero sum game and, you know, stay out of my territory and things like that. And what I realize is changing society doesn't actually work that way, which is what I'm doing. Right. I'm trying to change literally the entire country of China, which is 1.45 billion people. And although a lot of people think China is a, you know, dictatorship, authoritarian, whatever, but it doesn't work like this. You know, it really doesn't work this way. The real way things work is more like a tornado, right? You cannot have a business plan, like a management style, and then a business plan and step. It really doesn't work that way. The real world is more a sphere, and then it has momentum. And what you want to do is you want to envision what does the world look like after you're successful. So when I brought Smart Grid into China, I had to imagine, I had to draw little pictures of what Smart Grid looked like, and I had to explain to people how is it that China is going to benefit? What is China going to look like once the grid is completely different. When I started to teach mayors how to build cities, I had to teach by example because a lot of them don't travel. So I had to make little 15-minute videos of New York Bryant Park for public parks or Kaikoura, New Zealand for eco-heritage tourism. I had to bring them there and had to show them what that might look like China style. Right. And then you you start to get the initial people who align with that vision, mm-hmm. and then the base of the tornado starts to spin, mm-hmm. right? And then when people see this tornado, they get attracted to the tornado, so like tornado watchers, and then the particles might join you. And the goal is to get everybody to move at the same speed in the same direction. You can't have one particle going this way and another particle going that way. That doesn't work, right? The way that I think about this and intuit it seems really obvious that you have to build momentum. And you're not building momentum linearly or even exponentially, because that would take too long for a country the size of China. So you really need to just get everybody to help magnetize a larger and larger tornado. Mm-hmm. Now, with a program like China Dream, where we were trying to reimagine prosperity mm-hmm. and embed sustainable concepts into this new dream, which became the national slogan, China Dream, that all of these take about 2.5 years to 3 years to accomplish. So it's you need to like get people to jump into like a Stargate, a portal, right? And this is how I talk about this tornado, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, this tornado has its own inertia that it goes, mm-hmm. but you don't know its path. The tornado is like going like zigzag, 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 right? You can't say, okay, I've got a plan, please go this way, right? You can't do that to a tornado. Go with the flow, and you have to surrender to the path, but know that everything will change, and you know, you will be able to get there. And we're all collectively getting there. That's how I describe the work that I do. It's very much intuited based on energy and momentum and where people are going and what's the easiest path, not trying to hit my head against a brick wall and saying, everybody listen to me about climate change, the world is about to end.
Right.
Like, people really care about that. But if I say, hey, sharing food is sharing love. And did you know that every part of nature can be reborn with worm composting, and we should eat a rainbow every day, and everybody's like happy and joyful, and you know, there's this sense of euphoria and savoring food and so delicious. But guess what? 30% of greenhouse gas emissions are caused by our food system.
Right.
And food education allows us to achieve all of the 17 global goals. So it's sort of the same thing, but one is about euphoria and it's about joy and bliss and ecstasy and really high. And then another one is like, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is about to fall, the polar bear is about to die. Da, 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 da. Nobody wants to live in that low vibration all the time. So that's the difference about how I work compared to, you know, I would say like 1.0 type of change versus 2.0.
Right.
Type of change.
That's amazing. That's great. Yeah, that's great visual as well, right? With the tornado and all that analogies. And how did you find the system, I guess? When do you feel like you really kind of really clicked and that became your passion, and then you kind of really found that system, you know, that works for you, and that's what you're going with, you know, for every project?
You know, I was sort of pushed into this, right? So the U.S. government asked me to bring Smart Grid from the US into China. And then the Chinese government asked me to start mayoral training programs all at the same time. So it wasn't something that I planned. I just had to say, it's like swimming. If somebody pushes you into the pool, you don't think about, okay, how am I going to, you know, okay, left, right, left, right. I mean, nobody does that swimming, right? You just have to intuit, you know, your body, and is it floating or not? You know, are you breathing or not? And you have to sort of like go with the flow to make sure that you're actually afloat. That's your goal, right? And to do that, you have to sense where your body is and where the water is, and you know, your senses, you know, the people around you and how other people are feeling about the momentum, and make sure that everybody is constantly attracted to this tornado by making sure that you have a lot of milestones. Yeah. Connect the dots to this tornado.
There were so many different projects then. I mean, some of them, as you mentioned, are kind of pushed on you, but you have new projects as well that you are attracted to or you can select. So how do you select those projects, and what vertical do you particularly kind of identify with? I mean, I know you said you're environmentalist, but which vertical do you feel like you're more gravitating towards?
So I do have a lot of options, and people are constantly asking me to be involved in things. So my one rule when I look at things is, what is the ripple effect? And then part of it is, do I feel good about this? Do I feel aligned to it? A lot of it is, I use my heart to make the decision and I use my head to execute. And so when I choose projects, for example, right now I'm involved in two or three projects. One is the Universal Peace Sanctuary, mm-hmm. and that is a physical building on a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is on the birthplace of Lord Buddha. Mm-hmm. And this is meant to be sort of like a World Economic Forum, but for peace dialogues. And so this is something that I, one, feel like I have unique ability to add value to the project. So my time is well spent. And if I can attract people to the Universal Peace Sanctuary on one of the most energetic spots in the world, I think that it will have massive ripple effects. Mm-hmm. And who wouldn't want peace in our time? The other thing is rebirthing the Navajo Nation. And this is something that, again, September 6th last year in 2020, a man named Kevin Martin just looked me up on Facebook and asked me to help. And so I sort of immediately said yes, because I already had signs that I should be working with Indigenous peoples. So some of it is like, do you feel called to it? Do you feel like you're uniquely able to add value? Do you feel like there's going to be a massive ripple effect? The ripple effect I call an acupressure point. So if I push on this, am I going to be able to affect the rest of the body? And if the answer is yes, then I will, I should be focused on that. You know, some of it is I look at, sometimes you get signals, and I always look at signals in threes. So if somebody hits my head and says, hey, you should work on this, and I'm like sort of ignoring it because I'm tired or bored or like I'm doing something else, and somebody over here mentions the same word, as like hits me on the head again, and you know, I'm a little dense that way, and then it takes me a third time and somebody mentions it again, I'm like, oh, I should pay attention to this. There's three times, it means okay, I'm clearly called to. So you can see a lot of my work is very intuitive. And that is because I feel like when you're learning an industrial education, that at that moment, you are learning step by step, right? You are trying to memorize step by step, and you're trying to improve step by step. And then exponential is sort of the next, you know, the S curve is the next thing that you learn about technologies, and you're trying to get new technologies up past that tipping point so that it can grow faster and then it plateaus. But I think that when you are in a different space, when you really listen to your heart and you listen to, you know, this tornado of whether or not this tornado has enough momentum to build and whether or not you have the ability to attract people to this tornado. And if you can start seeing people attracted to that tornado very quickly, then what happens is it's almost like literally jumping through a portal, a wormhole, and that just like catapults you to a completely different world within 2.5 years to 3 years. And this is what I found over and over and over again to be true in my work.
That's pretty awesome though. Kind of just, you know, you kind of partly letting it happen, but then, you know, suddenly you'll see the jump of all the hard work that you put in place, and then it jumps to its own place. So that's pretty awesome. Yeah. And speaking of the projects, which is there a particular one or a few that you're most the proudest of and happiest working on?
Well, I mean, I would say bringing in smart grid into China revolutionized the entire electrical grid of China. And that is sort of the skeleton, the backbone of all energy use. It's the on-ramp of renewables. It's the it gives you the ability to use energy more efficiently as well. So really a lot of what's happening today, for example, there's over 500 smart cities being prototyped in China. None of that could happen without the incorporation of these new technologies of smart grid. Smart grid is a little bit like what internet is to rotary. And so that one, I think, is probably the most significant foundational work that we've done. You know, catalyzing clean energy in China, and now China is the leader in using clean energy and producing clean energy and creating manufacturing equipment like solar panels or wind turbines to ship around the world. You know, that is really fundamentally important to getting to carbon neutral. And China now has committed to going carbon neutral by 2060. However, I would say the thing that I'm most proud of is the work that I did to understand how to change societal behavior. And when I say societal scale, I mean like 1.45 billion people. And somehow the work that we did ended up being the national slogan of China, China Dream. And you know, it's really fascinating to really understand how we did this, how we worked with advertising agencies, how we worked with government officials, how we worked with universities, how we worked with artists and journalists and storytellers of all sorts to come together to create the momentum to retell the story of prosperity. Because really that's what we were doing, is we weren't just pushing a sustainable lifestyle like recycling or, you know, sort your waste or, you know, eat more plant-rich diet. It wasn't like one single intervention here and there. It was really this overall story, this overall world that we were creating and imagining and getting people excited about.
That's amazing.
That's what I would say I'm most proud of, because that has the biggest ripple effects. You know, if you can't dream of the world that you want, how are you possibly going to go in that direction?
Wow. Yeah. Absolutely. What are the challenges with that? I mean, there's so many, I'm sure, but what are the main challenges? I mean, what you mentioned, the whole campaign is a national campaign. It's basically, yeah, selling, I mean, not selling, like talking about the lifestyle, where you can get to. And so did you have to work closely with an agency or multiple agencies to do that?
So the key to the tornado is that you don't depend on any one particle. Right. Every particle is part of the tornado in some way. But we did work with the global creative director of Saatchi & Saatchi S to create the initial workshop. Mm-hmm. And then the head of Ogilvy Green in China then helped us also. And then the CEO of Edelman, which is a PR agency, also joined in. And then we had a lot of journalists and people like USC Annenberg Norman Lear Center teach me about episodic TV. We had Shannon Group in Australia, another advertising agency that worked on things like work safety and those types of societal changes. Mm-hmm. And we just absorbed a lot. And we realized, okay, you know, from all of these people that have experiences here and there, we put them together into this tornado effect of dreaming together. What is the collective China dream? Mm-hmm. What is, and then we had more and more and more workshops with mayors to companies to university students to et cetera. And it just became bigger and bigger. And what happens is it just becomes part of the zeitgeist all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And what really happened was, even though we were in like Vogue to business magazines to newspapers and government magazines and all sorts of things, even though we had a lot of press about the China dream, I think what really kicked it up a notch was when Tom Friedman wrote a whole column about it. He came to China and I brought him around to meet a lot of people. But when he went back, he ended up writing about our program. So that ended up being China Needs Its Own Dream column. And that was translated into Chinese in October 2012. And then the Oriental Outlook magazine wrote a whole cover story on it, The Power of the China Dream. And they did three major articles, one with a government official, one with a professor, and one with me, the, you know, NGO. And it just so happens that Xi Jinping, the president of China, stepped into power that month. And so he used that term in his first speech.
Wow.
And that became the second most popular phrase used the next year. And then now, if you look at subway billboards, commercials, advertisements, everything has China dream, China dream, China dream. But the pictures that they're using to depict this have embedded in them, you know, sort of green grass and blue sky and happy children. And, you know, these types of little elements that we were embedding into the new idea of prosperity. Right. And when people can see that, then their subconscious works really hard, whether they're sleeping or awake, to make this dream happen together. So that is really the trick.
I mean, with such a large population, that's amazing to be able to move the needle and do so much, right?
And I do find that from a marketing perspective, it's good to have a personification of a movement mm-hmm. that is warm and welcoming and inclusive and says, please come and join this movement. Mm-hmm. It's not an elitist movement. It's not against something movement. It's a for something movement. It's a positive high vibration movement. And so it does help to have like a sort of a smiley face to some of these movements. I have found that to be true of all the campaigns that I've been right. involved in.
And speaking of energy, and you've talked a lot in your analogies with body as well, can you speak a little bit about your work with, you know, the energy and I guess the higher vibration that you've talked about as well?
Yeah, I speak about that a lot because in when I was in college in late 1980s, I started to work with a Qi master from South Shaolin Temple in China. And his particular lineage birthed all of the martial arts in China. And it's Qigong, which is sort of like an energetic practice that's a little bit more intense than Reiki. And so when I learned this, which is basically learning how to feel the energy between people at a distance, right? And then projecting energy from your hand to other people, you can actually learn to heal people's bodies with this energy. And so I didn't quite realize how it affected me. I just thought it was something my dad introduced me to and it was going to be good for my health. And, you know, it was interesting. And who doesn't like Kung Fu Panda, right? I didn't really recognize how much it really just sort of embedded itself into every aspect of my life until very recently, about maybe 2017, when I realized, oh, my grandmaster is about to retire. Nobody really can step into his shoes. And so 20 generations later, this lineage may, I'm not going to say disappear because there's a few of us that keep it alive, but it's not going to be at the same intensity or knowledge level. So I started to think, how do I describe this to people outside of our very small circle? Mm-hmm. And so when I asked permission to do this, because it is transmitted, you know, not publicly, I started to realize that, whoa, you know, understanding that everything is one energetic field and that you can affect somebody else's energetic field affects the way that I speak, affects the way that I raise children, affects the way that I do sales meetings mm-hmm. and explain the orchestration of a sales meeting. I mean, it affects everything. So, you know, really wasn't until recently, I mean, 3 decades later, that I have started to really intentionally use this knowledge in a much more world-changing way and then be able to explain it. If you ask me about how I changed the world 6 times over, you know, 5 years ago, I don't think I could have explained it. Because I was still in the midst of doing. And, you know, you tend to say, okay, well, I work hard. Maybe I'm better at certain things than other people. You know, maybe I'm lucky. Maybe I attracted to the right people and they really helped. And so you tend to focus on, you know, maybe like individual things, but you don't really see the ecosystem in the way that I explained it, this tornado. So it really wasn't until the last few years that I could explain to other people what was going on, which is simply imagine the world that you want, be really joyful about it, you know, be ecstatic about that. Imagine it already here today. Surrender to the path. Don't worry about how you get there. You'll just get there. And then understand the energetics. Mm-hmm. Understand that you can't let the tornado fall apart. I hope that's helpful.
That is very helpful. That's amazing. You did it like it's such a condensed way. That's awesome. I did want to ask like what other advice, I mean, that's already like the major advice, but is there any other advice throughout, you know, along the way that you find very helpful, either you somebody imparted on you or you've learned and you wanted to let the listeners know?
I would say the one big thing that I've learned painfully is that, and so I was really, really, really focused on my cerebral side and structural side and overpowering people with smarts, right? Like that's how I would succeed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until recently that I realized the heart is actually a much more powerful instrument than the brain. So for example, the heart has a 5,000 times stronger magnetic field than the brain. It has a 100 times stronger electric field than the brain. So 5,000 times stronger magnetic field, 100 times stronger electric field, and it also has its own neurons, so it can think and remember on its own. So if you use your heart first to make the decisions, then you use your brain to execute and implement, and you can align the two. So your emotions aren't thinking or feeling something that you want to do, but then your brain says, no, I can't do that. I really have to do that because society tells me to do that. Mm-hmm. or I have to go step by step by step. Then you are stressed, number one, right? It's very mentally stressful, but you aren't in flow. And so it took me my entire life to really get here, which is that the secret is in the heart and not the head. And then you just need to align. You need to align your emotions, your thoughts, and then what you actually do, your physical actions. So those three things are sort of my divine trinity.
And one last question then, how do you balance everything and how do you relax? Is there a ritual that you do to relax?
I'm not sure I'm balanced. I mean, there's always something that is like, you know, I could spend more time on. I do think that it's better to aim for balance than happiness. That's my personal philosophy. I think happiness is something that is always sort of this moving target, whereas balance is something that you can feel, right? You're like lopsided or one ear is off and you can feel something is not aligned. My philosophy is that I can do anything and be anything I want. Anything is available to me. The most important thing is just to follow my sense of wonder, my childlike wonder, my sense of curiosity, and what gives me euphoria. Like, you know, do I want to go swimming in a pool or a beach? Do I want to paint right now? Do I want to listen to Joyce's podcast? Do I want to create a beautiful dish in the kitchen? All of that stuff is available to me, and I'm going to be most effective if I'm fascinated with that and I'm very curious about it and makes me happy or joyous and gives me this sense of euphoria. I'm going to naturally put my heart, my brain, and my soul and my actions all into this one thing.
Thank you so much. I think that's all I have. But thank you for your time. And this is amazing.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Joyce, for having me. I really enjoy this time with you. And I hope this helps somebody.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure. That definitely helped me. And I'm sure the listeners that this is great advice. And thanks again for your time, because I know you're super busy. You got so many things going on. And it's amazing how it's amazing how much time you spend in Clubhouse as well, right? Do you really enjoy like the sessions on Clubhouse?
I think every room is magic. If you know the secret that I told you about this tornado and using your heart and getting everybody in alignment, then what you'll find is magic occurs in every single room. People's lives are transformed. Every single room.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And I will absolutely join and listen to more of the conversations as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.